Following programming is sponsored by Salts Mangaluzzi Bendeschi. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Salts Mangaluzzi Bendeschi Hour. Here at WWDB Talk 860, we've got a fantastic show, definitely an anticipated show, and because we're ecstatic to bring on to the program Salts Mangaluzzi Bendeschi managing shareholder Larry Bendeschi. Larry, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks so much for having me and Sam Dwerdick of my office on. We appreciate it so much.
It's obviously, and it's my pleasure, and certainly it's great to have Sam Dwerdick as well. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to today's discussion.
Absolutely. And so we got a lot to talk about. I mean, Salts Mangaluzzi Bendeschi, one of the premier personal injury firms in the United States of America, and certainly there is no understating that. It's a total pleasure to bring this broadcast to the Delaware Valley. If you would, Larry, introduce yourself, obviously, and kind of what you do at the firm. It is funny because we could probably take an hour on that, but a little bit about your role as managing partner.
Sure. I run the firm on a day-to-day basis. My law partner for many, many years, Bob Mangaluzzi, is the president of the firm, but I deal with the business of the firm. I make sure that we have people in place to handle our cases and take care of our clients. We might be the only law firm in the city of Philadelphia that's taking on additional space and hiring new people because our business is doing so well. So I deal with every business aspect of the firm. I deal with the hiring. I deal with making sure people have the resources necessary to take care of our clients, which is the most important thing for us.
And having said that, a firm the magnitude of Salts Mangaluzzi Bendeschi, I can only imagine. My first reaction when we talk about, and I've been to the firm, and it's just an incredible place, top Liberty One. And so having said that, I imagine you sleep maybe two and a half hours a night.
Yeah, I mean, and it has been crazier still since the start of the pandemic. As I said, most law firms are contracting their space. They're saying, well, we don't have to have people in the office. We handling personal injury cases, handling catastrophic cases where we're representing individuals that need us so badly to take care of them, we need to see those clients. We need to be with those clients. We need to connect with those clients. So for us, our lawyers are here. We're here every day. And we're growing as a firm. We've added 49 employees, correct, which is remarkable. We now have 115 employees. We have 44 lawyers, which is the second biggest personal injury law firm in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and we've actually taken on additional space. We have construction going on right now so that we have enough lawyers and enough staff to make sure our clients have everything they need for us to handle their case.
And, it is amazing. We've talked about the pandemic many times on the broadcast. And when you say that, I also do a real estate show. And I had a commercial real estate broker on recently. And to actually comprehend what you just said, for people to understand, there were so many businesses that were impacted throughout the pandemic. I mean, God help somebody if they were in the hospitality business, but commercial real estate. Okay, until the pandemic, no one could have imagined the hit that it would take. So many law firms, either gave up their space or the majority of their space because they were hit so hard. The magnitude of understanding. Now, putting that into perspective, you know, Saltz Mongoose Bendeski is has several top floors on the Liberty One. So it's the prime location in the city of Philadelphia, and you're expanding your location because of the employees and the attorneys that you've brought on. When you hear that, people, you got to think and read between the lines and understand how amazing that is, because in the high 90s percents, law firms in particular are, decreasing their space and consolidating because of the hit that they took during the pandemic. Now, we're going to talk about some top cases. We're going to talk about 2022 and give the listeners a vast knowledge of what, the kind of the magnitude of the firm. So having said that, but Larry, before we get into it, talk about the leadership that yourself and Bob Mongaluzzi, obviously the importance of it, that you guys exude in order to, operate, a firm, of that magnitude and how important that is.
And let me just say, Joe, everything you said was right. Most law firms, almost all law firms are looking to contract their space. They're mm-hmm. looking to sublease. They're looking to have people working remotely. They're hoteling where somebody is coming in for 2 days, occupying an office or a station. Somebody else is coming in for 2 or 3 days and occupying that same station. And we believe that we need to be here for our clients. So that's why, and as you said, business is really good. We are growing, both in numbers and in practice areas. We couldn't be more pleased with the development and growth of the firm.
I'll tell you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, in terms of leadership, it's not just me and Bob. I run the firm on a day-to-day basis. Bob is the president of the firm. Ultimately the decisions are ours as to what happens. But we, I think, are big enough and smart enough to recognize that we have remarkably talented people at our firm. We work in a team approach where there are team leaders of each practice group, and we rely upon those team leaders to tell us and help us lead the firm. So, do you need another lawyer? What kind of resources do you need? Is there another paralegal that has to be on your team? We have Drew Duffy of our office is in charge of our social media. Bob Zimmerman of our office is in charge of our program where we bring in law clerks every summer to help out and work with the firm and gain a nice experience. We have a team leader committee where we meet on a weekly basis and talk about what's going on in the firm, what's happening, what are the issues that you need to address. So it's not just me and Bob leading the firm. Yes, the decisions are ultimately ours, but we rely upon the very talented and capable people here to help us lead.
And it's interesting.
And Joe,
go ahead. I'm sorry, Sam.
Joe, I'll say, on a day-to-day basis, Larry's and Bob's leadership is evident. Their doors are literally always open for anybody to come in on any case and ask them about any issue. They have more experience at this firm than anybody, and they've seen it all. And so on a day-to-day basis, every single attorney at this firm feels welcome to walk into their office and ask them questions. And having that day-to-day leadership is, from my perspective, invaluable.
And it's interesting because we've been doing the show for the last 8 months, and I can tell you we've had almost all the teams on. And to a person, that sentiment is primary in our conversations. The leadership at the firm that Larry and Bob provide, is contagious, and that it's a beautiful thing when you see so many different teams who point to the leadership at the firm as the primary reason why the firm is one of the premier firms in the United States of America. And I'm not saying in Philadelphia or in Pennsylvania. I'm talking about, and people are, you know, we've been doing a show for a long time, and people are going to hear fairly soon when we start talking about the cases what we're talking about here. And Larry, you said something when in regards to your responsibilities, very interesting. You talk about the human resources process and the hiring process, the culture at the firm. Okay, is second to none. I mean, these people are serious attorneys, litigators. They live and breathe their job 24/7. That, of course, leadership and the example set from the top and the long time success that the firm has had, is contagious and all that. But talk about the hiring process when you bring a team in, when you bring an employee in or an attorney, what you're looking for, because it all starts there. If that process of bringing individuals in is so important. Talk about what you look for when you bring somebody into the firm.
First of all, it's a collaborative process for hiring people. If Larry Cohan and his mass tort team or Drew Duffy and his construction team need to bring in somebody, I'm going to have them be part of the process because they have to work with this person. They want to work with this person, and they have to feel good about bringing this person in, and the person has to feel good about working on that team. But we're looking for people that care deeply about what we do, that feel good about handling people's cases and connecting with people. We're looking for somebody that's going to, you talked about the culture of the firm, is going to help the culture of the firm. We try to we work hard, as you said. We go all out and representing our clients. We are tough as can be in representing our clients. But we hire people that are good people, that really want to do for our clients. And we've created, I think, successfully, a culture of cooperation among our lawyers and our staff, that if a lawyer has a trial coming up, everybody is on hand to help out that lawyer. Any information, any research you need, do you need me to cover something for you? What do you need? We are all together in this. And I think there are other firms that develop a kind of a competition among people. Well, there's a certain limited number of resources. There's a limited number of amount of money. We are not like that. We believe that a rising tide lifts all boats, and we're all in this together.
And that is
the culture of the firm.
And it's interesting, Larry, because we're going to talk about the big things that happened in 2022. If we were to sit here and talk about I could ask one blanket statement if you talked about all the name for, cases that Saltzman, Galluzzi, Bendesky brought to unbelievable outcomes, we'd be here all day long. But the beautiful thing is we have the opportunity to talk. We're going to dedicate the next year to talking about the cases throughout the year. We do have some fantastic cases we're going to talk about right now, but I want to say something to the people. One of the things Larry just said is talking about the resources. The most important thing, the experience and resources of the Saltzman, Galluzzi, Bendesky team is so important, because there's almost no situation that if they believe in that they can't fight, no matter what Goliath. Normally, when you have a catastrophic injury case, it's David versus Goliath. It's not that way with Saltzman, Galluzzi, Bendesky. They have the resources to go at any level. And the one thing I want to say before we get into the cases, Larry, is the pride that your attorneys have on being a part of the firm. Okay, one of the things that struck me, and you talk about the passion, the good people, and those individuals, have have the fire. Talk about obviously Drew Duffy and Bob Zimmerman, and we could go on forever with the great people we have, Larry Cohen. But the point is, they have all those skills, but they're proud to be at the firm, and that rubs off on the client. And so, having said that, let's do this. I wanted to make sure I got that in, because we're going to be talking about the cases. Let's talk about and we're going to obviously bring Sam Gordick into the program now. Let's talk about some of the successful cases and outcomes from 2022. I mean, and these are national cases. Larry, do you want to kind of direct this?
Yeah, that's great. So let me introduce Sam Gordick, who is one of our remarkably bright and talented lawyers of the firm. Sam has been with the firm for 5 years,
six years,
and is working on complex, very important, catastrophic cases. He had a remarkably good year in 2022, as did the whole firm. But he and Jeff Goodman worked with Bob Mongaluzzi, and it was really Sam and Jeff doing the day-to-day work in the Surfside Collapse case in Florida. Sam devoted thousands of hours to that case, and it was one of the most remarkable results in the history of Pennsylvania, in one of the most tragic incidents in the history of the United States. So I'd like Sam to talk about the case and kind of give your listeners a flavor of what they did and how hard they worked and how creative they were to make sure that the people that were involved in this tragedy received the compensation they deserved.
Sam?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Joe, and thank you, Larry. Joe, I think as your listeners can probably tell, first, I do want to say it's an absolute privilege to work at the firm, to work for Larry, to work for Bob, and to work on some of the cases that I get to work on. And Surfside was certainly one of the biggest cases I worked on in 2022. So for the listeners that may not remember, back in June of 2021, the Champlain Towers South condominium building on Miami Beach in Surfside, Florida, just after 1:30 in the morning, suffered a catastrophic structural collapse. About half the building collapsed in a span of about 5 seconds. And with it, tragically, 98 people were killed. And so when that happened, we were immediately contacted because of our firm's longstanding and remarkable history of success in structural collapse litigation. And so literally the next day, I believe Bob and Jeff Goodman were on a plane down to South Florida. And that started a one-year-long journey that was one of the most remarkable experiences I've had and one of the most saddening experiences I've had. Because as we can talk about today, every single attorney involved became deeply connected with the clients of this tragedy. And just hearing their stories and listening to them was absolutely heart-wrenching. But I'm happy today to talk about some of the finer points of the case and kind of give you an overview of how the litigation unfolded.
Now, Sam, now I know why we had to postpone our show several times. I can't even imagine. Okay, for the listeners to understand. Now, the case settled for, what was the amount?
$1.2
billion. $1.2
billion
in remarkably, this is the understatement of the century, the case settled within a year of the collapse.
That's right. The final settlement was approved by the court, by Judge Michael Hansman, one day before the one-year anniversary.
So,
which is unprecedented, Joe. It's unprecedented in the history of America that a case of this tragedy, this magnitude, this complexity was resolved for this amount of money in such a short period of time.
I just want to say this to the people. There, a $1.2 billion settlement that settled within a year of the case. Now, I think that I just want to give a comparison to the people. There have been car accidents that have literally with settlements of $10,000 or less that have taken three times longer. Okay, so the magnitude of what you're talking about is nothing short of mind-boggling. Elaborate, Sam, because mother of God, you know, it's if you actually told somebody, you know, that and they didn't know better, they'd be like, no way is that possible. How does that happen?
Sure. So first, it happens through an incredible amount of hard work from a huge number of people, not just Bob Mongaluzzi, Jeff Goodman, and myself, and all of the other fantastic South Florida attorneys and firms that were involved in the case. But above all else, the work of the judge, Judge Michael Handman, down in Miami-Dade County. He was the most dedicated, hardworking, and invested judge I've ever come across. I believe that Jeff Goodman, I speak for him, that he's ever come across. And this judge made sure that the case was going to be, as he said numerous times, not business as usual. And he was absolutely correct. So we were the only non-Florida and really non-South Miami, South Florida firm involved in the case, except for one from out in California. And really, it was due to our success and our track record with structural collapse litigation and construction litigation. And really, that's a product of some nuances with Florida law that result in not many firms down in Florida handling construction litigation. But right from the outset, you know, the court appointed our firm and Bob Mongaluzzi to the plaintiff steering committee, and many, many of the other firms in the steering committee looked to us early in the case and routinely as to the direction that things should be pushed in. Immediately after being assigned to and appointed to the plaintiff steering committee, Jeff Goodman was responsible for the selection and vetting of liability experts. And the way that construction comes into this, not only is examination of the building that collapsed, but early on, the prospects for recovery here were incredibly bleak. The building itself and the condominium association was woefully underinsured. They had about $50 million in insurance. And estimates were that even on a good day, the land, if it was sold, would be sold for something around $100 million, maybe as high as $120, which is what it ended up selling for. But I think right in the first week, Jeff Goodman zeroed in on the construction project next door to the building that collapsed that was completed between 2016 to 2021, really almost early 2021. And we started exploring that. And so early on in the case, we got pre-complaint discovery from those developers, those contractors, and these were some of the biggest, most sophisticated developers and contractors in the business. And as we looked deeper and deeper, we started tragically to find more and more that they did wrong on that construction site that could have potentially impacted the structural stability of Champlain Towers.
Now, and having said that, what you know you're saying is that the insurance for the building and the property were one thing, but obviously there were corners cut in the construction, so there was a ton of more liability to go around and negligence.
It was the next door property,
okay.
Joe. So the property that collapsed was a 40-year-old property.
That's correct.
They built a new tower next door.
Got it.
And what Jeff and Sam explored was, did the building of the new tower next door compromise the Champlain Tower to cause it to fall?
Wow.
And as we looked deeper and deeper, we found, unfortunately, that it did. And so... You know, the investigation in this case, not just the document review, not just the depositions that we'll talk about in a little bit, but the on-site investigative work was one of the most remarkably complex projects in and of itself that I've ever seen. We had dozens and dozens of contractors and experts and project managers just for the investigation on-site for where this building collapsed. We were taking boring holes down hundreds of feet. We were pulling up the structural piles. We were doing test pits. And all of this was after the governmental investigation, NIST, N-I-S-T, completed their investigation, which took them a couple of weeks. And our investigation and the work that we had to do on that site lasted several months. And really, Jeff Goodman was the one that spearheaded management of all of that. He handled all of the experts, and he worked with and sometimes against defense counsel when we were trying to figure out what exactly needed to be done on site, but it was a remarkably complex undertaking.
Larry, talk about, you know, from such an experienced eye, what this compares to. In other words, a case of this magnitude can sometimes take 5 years, okay?
Yeah, that is absolutely true, Joe. And a lot of times the lawyers are doing everything they can do to get it done. It's just a court system that doesn't have a case management system, and sometimes cases drag on and the lawyers are doing everything they can do. In this case, they had a judge who was on top of this, who wanted this to be resolved, who wanted every person who was injured or killed to for their families to receive fair compensation. One thing that Sam didn't talk about was that the judge brought everybody in early and said, I want these families to be compensated. When it looked like there was, as Sam talked about, a limited insurance coverage and a limited pot to cover these families. And he said, I don't know if any of you lawyers are going to get paid. And I give credit to our firm, but I give credit to Sam and Bob and Jeff for saying, hey, look, we're going to do the right thing here. We can help out here. Our expertise and our talents, we can help. And if we don't get paid, we don't get paid. That's okay. Because we're going to go help out people really in need of help. And they did.
And what's interesting about that is, And I see this, and I say it, and that comment right there, talking about walking in and not putting yourself first and putting the clients first and the tragedies that happen, the community impact, but there's something called the contingency fee agreement, okay? Now, I get chills every time I think about it, and that's why I feel strongly that our listeners are listening to true heroes. And I say that because there's that $1.2 billion settlement, okay? How many people, Larry and Sam, in order to retain your services, best firm in the United States of America, how many people had to come out of pocket, okay? How many families that were devastated had to come out of pocket in order to pay your retainer?
Yeah, nobody, we never charge a client a penny. There are, and you talked about contingent fee agreement. The way it works is if we get money for the client and they're good with it, ultimately it's their decision, not ours, then we get a percentage of what they get. If we investigate a lot of cases that we say, look, we don't think there's a case here. The last thing we want to do is give somebody unreasonable expectations. The last thing we want to do is waste anybody's time. We'll, in a product liability case, we'll look at it. We'll bring an expert in. We'll say, hey, there's no case here. And we've spent $10,000 or $12,000 or $15,000. That's out of our pocket. The client doesn't pay a penny for that. And ultimately, we have to get a recovery in the case for the client for us to get paid. And you mentioned it, Joe. If we charged on an hourly basis like the big defense firms do,
sure,
we would charge $1,000 an hour or $800 an hour or $1,200 an hour. Our clients are regular people. They're teachers. They're construction workers. They work on the floors of factories. They're nurses. They can't afford to pay a lawyer $1,000 an hour, but they are great with the idea that, hey, this lawyer's my partner in this.
Yep.
This lawyer's going to work really hard. And the more the recovery is for me, the more the lawyer gets paid. That's great. We're in this together.
Yeah, and you make a great point. Best lawyers on the planet. And if a regular person, especially somebody, many breadwinners get injured, they're out of work. They could never afford to pay, premier attorneys. Which means, people understand this: This was a year-long case that settled, and it, because of the efficiency and unbelievable work by the firm, but it could have easily lasted 5 to 10, and maybe not 10 years, but there have 5 years easy, maybe longer. We've all heard some of the stories. And that means that the firm is like Larry, you talked about a partnership. The firm is investing in the case. There's no out-of-pocket costs. As long as that means the firm is not getting paid while the client is not getting paid. And so go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry, Joe. I interrupted you. I apologize.
No, what I'm saying is that that means there's no out-of-pocket costs. And if we talked about, and I can only imagine, okay, because we have some other cases we're going to talk about, I can only imagine what the firm invests in experts and all those things, for a case of this magnitude, that doesn't come out. That's another thing a client could never afford. And therefore, you could never afford justice, if your loved one was lost in a catastrophic case like this. But the contingency fee agreements, in my opinion, demonstrate what heroes we have. People don't hear that enough, but it's a fact that, and even the vetting process, like you said, Larry, before you even take a case, or you may not take a case, when somebody comes in, you may invest in investigators and experts to see if it's even a case worth the client, worth your representation and the client, so that obviously at the end of the day, you could never predict what's going to happen with a case. But when you are vetting a case and making decisions on a case, you are many times looking in the client's best interest and saying, we're not going to put this client through 2 years of a case if it's not potentially worth their while.
That's exactly right. I mean, the last thing we want to do is to have somebody have their deposition taken or sit through trial or answer interrogatories where at the end of the day, we can't get them the compensation that they were looking for. I don't want to create unreasonable expectations. So the cases we take, we are all in on. And the cases we don't take, we fully investigate and we look at them and we analyze them. And we have very clever and creative lawyers here. And we've come up with new causes of action in Pennsylvania. But if there isn't a case, we're straight up and honest with them at the very beginning. This is not a case. And because the last thing we want to do is give them unrealistic expectations or waste their time.
Yeah, and put them through that very, sometimes stressful process. Let's, Sam, kudos to yourself, Jeff Goodman, obviously Bob Mongolusi, Larry, and everybody at the firm for this absolutely incredible case. In no words, really. I mean, having said that, let's also kind of look at a couple other cases that came to fruition.
Hey, Joe?
Yeah.
Joe, before we do that,
sure.
Sam did find, sometimes there's a smoking gun in a case.
Sure.
And Sam found literally the smoking gun in this case. It was him that poured through the records and grinded it out and found which was the document that was the key document in this case.
Yeah, I think smoking gun might actually understate it a little bit. The inflammatory nature of this document is something that I had never seen before. And just quickly and without getting too much into the weeds, the main things that we were looking at with the next door construction was when they were building their foundation, in order to support the excavation, they had to install something called sheet piles, which are basically 1-inch thick sheets of metal that are about 40 feet long, and they get drilled into the ground to be able to support the excavation that the men are going to be working in. And when they do that, they use a vibratory hammer. And the vibrations produced from that can cause potentially damage to neighboring structures. And so these firms and contractors that perform sheet pile installation are supposed to do vibration monitoring with seismographs on site. And they were doing that when they were at the closest point to Champlain Towers, but we found that they were repeatedly exceeding the threshold for what was defined as a safe vibration level. and they would stop. They'd try to work with the, you know, the details of the vibratory hammer, try to bring the vibrations back down to an acceptable level. But more times than not, we found that they just continued with the work anyway. And you know, I was pouring through documents late one night. I think it was about 1 a.m. There were, I think, a little over a million pages of documents produced. And I found one single page handwritten daily job report from the contractor that was doing the sheet pile installation. And when these contractors are on site, the general contractor always has representatives, superintendents or foremen that are on site that, that manage the construction and make sure that things move according to plan, that safety issues are handled. And this daily job report reflected in handwriting, and Joe, I'm going to defer to you. There is some expletives in this, and so I don't know if that's all right on your show or
well,
not.
Well, yeah, we're live on the air, so we probably had to skip the expletives, but yeah, we'll get, you know.
Just use the first initial.
I will. So there's a daily job report that says, you know, I'm in, you know, in the middle of installing a 40-foot sheet pile. The seismologist, the person responsible for the vibrations, comes over, stops the work, and says, the vibrations are exceeding the level. We've got to stop the work. And then it says in the document, the superintendent for the GC walks over and he says, and there's quotation marks, you know, there was concern that they were damaging the south foundation wall of Champlain Towers. And so the GC walks over and in quotes it says, F that wall. We have money in the budget to replace it. Keep going.
Wow.
And so we found that. And I remember it distinctly. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I found that document. I completely forgot what time it was, and I call Jeff Goodman.
Wow.
And when he tells the story, he says, when you get a call at 1 a.m. from your associate,
it's usually not,
you know,
good
it's
news.
It's either really good
or really,
really
bad.
I
can only imagine. So that is unbelievable.
We found that document before we, you know, this was before we started depositions, and it was so buried in the documents. And it was produced by a subcontractor, not even one of the not the developer, not the general contractor, it was a subcontractor. And so we realized pretty early on that we were some of the only people that knew about this document. And so when we broke that out and used it at deposition, it completely blew the case open.
Wow. Wow. And by the way, what was that document again? In other words, who actually... go ahead, Larry.
The subcontractors, when they're on site, it is routine, and we see it in a lot of construction cases, and really any construction site that is well managed. Subcontractors will have daily reports where they talk about the men that they had on site, the men and the women on site. They'll talk about the work they did. They'll talk about any kind of potential safety issues that they've got to address and kind of summarize the work that they do. And so the sheet pile installation subcontractor had these handwritten daily reports, and handwriting makes it much, much harder to kind of keyword search in a million documents. And so you really kind of just have to look at them with your own eyes instead of trying to keyword search them. So this was a single page handwritten daily job report from March of 2016 that laid this all out.
Out of a million documents produced.
It's staggering.
And you can tell from the way Sam talks, you know, you've talked about it in this show, we handle more construction accident cases at a higher level than any firm, not just in Philadelphia, not just in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, but in the nation. That's why we were brought in to help out in this case. And you can tell by the way Sam speaks that he knows the construction field. He knows what's going on. He knows what to look for and how to find it.
I mean that's the second part of what I was going to say. Literally, I can only imagine what was going through Sam's mind when it happened. Like literally, you know, making that call. You must have been holding your breath. But also, listen to this: the experience at the firm and of the attorneys. How many firms would not, and how many? I mean, I can't even imagine something that specialized. Somebody looking for it, having the experience to understand. I was a union iron worker for 20 years, never heard that. Okay, now wasn't a subcontractor, but didn't understand, those standards that need to be met. Okay, and so how many people even have an idea, or how many attorneys or firms on the planet would even know to look for that type of situation. That to me shows over and above the experience of the attorneys in the firm, the leadership and the experience. I would like to say a couple things before. So I there are no words to kind of that I could say to really that could really elaborate on what an incredible job. Like you said, it's an unprecedented. Probably across the United States to have a situation where 80 plus people perished in a catastrophe. Usually investigations alone can take 2 years. And so having said that, I mean, absolutely incredible, gentlemen. And I do want to lay a couple things out because we only have 20, maybe 15 minutes left. But I do want to say, when you talk about the construction, third-party construction, cases that you guys have handled, one of the ones, I was on a show several years back with Bob Mongaluzzi and Andrew Duffy and the Tropicana case, okay?
Right, I handled that with Bob.
Okay, so there you go. And the conversation I had, and I know we're not going to get it, but the collapse of the stair tower at the Tropicana that killed several people, one of them was Mike Whitland, who was my boss when I worked for Cornell Company on the Frankfurt. Talk about a great guy. And the fact is, my father ran, obviously, the Ironworkers Union for 40 years. And no matter what the situation, because we had such catastrophic injuries, and Saltz Mongoose Bendeski is a personal injury firm. And I don't think that term actually does it justice to the scope of things, but he only called SMB. And the reason that is because, of the magnitude of the injuries, number one, and the success rate and justice and the Tropicana catastrophe, which took Mike's life and a number of other people's lives, was a great example of what you guys did. And so when Drew mentioned that on air, it just shook me to the core because, Mike was a great guy, and I'm so proud of the job that the firm did. Now, before we, because we could elaborate on that,
We also represented Mike's son, Eddie Whitland, who broke his neck in that accident. Mike's wife, Nancy, is a tremendous person, such a wonderful person, and Mike was one of four people that died in that tragedy.
Just unbelievable. And so, I thank you for that representation. We have, obviously, we want to move on and touch base on some other cases. We're not going to be able to, obviously, time-wise elaborate, but one that people might remember, the Amtrak derailment case, okay, which, by the way, was on national TV and national news on a constant, literally speaking, around the clock. Talk about that, if you will, Larry and Sam.
Sure. So I was, again, privileged enough to work on that case directly with and under Bob Mongaluzzi and Jeff Goodman. And it's really a sad case, and all of these Amtrak derailments are, because the passengers are always completely innocent, and they put their trust into they've given their trust to the rail carriers to make sure that their trip is safe. But back in September of 2021, the Amtrak Empire Builder train, which is a historic line that runs from Chicago to Portland and then Seattle, and it's advertised as giving great views of the Pacific Northwest. When it was just outside of Joplin, Montana, on September 25th, 2021, it suffered a catastrophic derailment. The final four cars were thrown from the tracks and flipped onto their sides, and the last three cars became completely detached. And so we were retained very quickly to represent all three people that were killed in the derailment, as well as several people that suffered severe injuries but were able to survive. And that, again, is a case that we were remarkably able to resolve in about 14 months. But the NTSB's investigation is still going. They have not released their official report of the incident yet, but we struck an agreement with Amtrak and the rail owner that they stipulated to liability. And then we just litigated the damages for our clients. And it was a privilege to represent these clients because they were some of the most remarkable families and people that I've ever met.
And I want people to know something when we hear this. I remember. So when you talk about having the experience and the success rate, one of the things that people should understand is, especially these out of state cases, because when I first heard about them, like the duck boat situation, obviously is represented the Philly case, but also the out of state case, and I often wondered. When it first came out, because I'd heard you guys were representing the out of state case as well, how that happens. And one of the things that's so important, and you mentioned kind of one of the sincerest forms of flattery when it comes to a law firm is when clients, refer you somebody they know because of the job you did. But also what's amazing about it is you get these cases referred to you by other law firms. And they could be huge law firms or smaller law firms, but they send those cases, they refer those cases to you. Even you talk about the national profile of the firm, you get those cases sent to you from other firms from all across the country. Elaborate on that, Larry.
Sure. And you're absolutely right, Joe. So there are lawyers from the Philadelphia area, from Pennsylvania, all across the country, who maybe they have a cousin that tragically died in an accident. Maybe they are a lawyer doing real estate work or estates work, who either have known us for a long time and know of our reputation and how good we are and how much we care about our clients, or is a lawyer who just, because of the internet, Googles who's the best firm to handle this type of case. They send those cases to us, and we treasure the relationships we have with lawyers who send us the cases. We understand how important it is for us to take care of their loved one or their friend, and we take that responsibility very, very seriously.
And having said that, there's a because people might not have understood the connection there of obviously representing cases from PA, from Philly to Los Angeles. Let's talk about a couple other, we got about 8 minutes. Let's talk, obviously, I want to mention Bob Mongluzzi and Drew Duffy, $15 million construction case outcome, during 2022. Elaborate on that if you will, Larry.
Yeah, sure. So, it was difficult to try cases during the pandemic. We had to wear a mask in the courtroom, which makes it more difficult to connect with the jurors, for them to see our faces, for them to see the witnesses' faces. But we tried a number of cases during the pandemic. We didn't allow the pandemic or the masking requirement to thwart us. Bob and Jeff and Sam tried a case in early 2021, one of the first complex civil trials in Philadelphia, and got a 17.
I think the different case you're thinking of.
They tried the case. They settled the case during the trial. We tried the Feldman case toward the end of the pandemic in mid 2022, where Bob and Drew Duffy got a $15.5 million verdict against a construction company. I mean, one of the things that we do, and I think we do really well, Joe, is we had settled that case with two of the three defendants. We took care of our client. We made sure that our client was financially taken care of for the rest of his life. The third defendant, we gave an opportunity to resolve the case. They did not take that opportunity to settle it for what we thought was a fair amount, and we went and tried the case against that defendant. We're at that point,
we had no pressure on us because our client's taken care of, and we love to go dry cases. And Bob and Drew knocked it out of the park, and they got a $15.5 million verdict on behalf of that client to make sure that that client was really fully taken care of against the defendants that we brought the case against.
And so one of the things I'd like to say to the people to point out there at the read between the lines is the fact that, you know, the firm not only obviously is willing to settle a case if it's the right for your client only, but also the willingness to go to trial and the fact that the insurance companies know that they're not, when they see, you know, Saltz Monk, Lucy Bendesky, obviously is representing somebody, they know you're willing to take that to the distance, which does impact potential offers for settlements because they know you're willing to go and you've had a ton of success there. So keep that in mind when we have these discussions. You mentioned
you're absolutely right, Joe. Trials are fun for us. You know, this is where we get to show our stuff. But you're right. Ultimately, the most important thing for us is making sure a catastrophically injured client is financially taken care of. That's
absolutely
what they hired us to do. That's what our primary objective is. So if you're right, the threat of trial, them knowing,
yes,
the insurance company or defendant knowing how good we are, they're going to generally resolve the case and pay us what is a fair amount to take care of the client. And if they don't, then we're going to go bang their brains in a trial.
Absolutely. And having said that, you wanted talk about the Montan. I think we have 5 minutes left max, or 4 or 5 minutes. But so the Montanez case that was brought to fruition.
Sure. And that was another case that I was lucky enough to work on with Jeff Goodman. And so this case just very briefly involved an accident where our client was riding a bicycle in Philadelphia, and a dump truck made a right-hand turn, ran over him, and killed him. So as we are in discovery against a number of defendants, we find out that there is another company out there that we hadn't sued yet. We were pre-statute, that we hadn't sued yet, that we found out was giving some kinds of, you know, instructions and directions to this dump truck driver. They didn't employ him, but they were, to some extent, controlling his work. And Jeff, in one of the depositions of the driver and his coworker, latched onto that very quickly, and we realized that we needed to bring that defendant into the case, and we did. And ultimately, we relied on an area of Pennsylvania law that is very rarely utilized, and it's called the dual agent doctrine. Probably about 40 years ago, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and Superior Court issued some rulings that said that in Pennsylvania, you can have an agent with more than one principal or more than one master. And what that means is that when there's somebody like a dump truck driver who runs over and kills an innocent pedestrian or cyclist, you can tag not only his employer with that negligence, but if the facts and circumstances are right and there's another person, another company giving instructions and directions, you can potentially tag them as well. And so Jeff latched onto that very early in the case. We explored that. And ultimately, we were able to, prove that, and we reached a very, very good result for the client in that case. But it utilized and hinged on a very underutilized area of Pennsylvania law called the dual agent doctrine, which we are hoping becomes more prevalent.
Fantastic. And before we go, I want to mention, we talked about the pandemic and the growth at the firm. We didn't get a chance to talk about the civil sexual assault unit, bad faith claims, unit and division. Marnie Berger does a great job there. And of course, the mass torts division. So many great things going on at the firm. It was such a pleasure. Larry and Sam, just a fantastic job and a great conversation. We got to do a show on what, obviously 2023 and all the great things happening. Larry, if you will, contact information if anybody wants to get in touch with the firm.
Sure. Main phone number is 215-496-8282, and we are at smbb.com, and certainly we invite anybody to go on our website. We believe that law firms shouldn't just make claims They should back it up with the results, and they could see the results that we have on behalf of our clients for all these years on our website.
Absolutely. Well, Larry Bendesky, managing partner at Salts Mongoose Bendesky, and Sam Dordick, fantastic show. Thank you so much, obviously, for sharing your time, and here's to a great 2023, and thanks for everything you do for those people that otherwise could not represent themselves. On behalf of Larry Bendesky and Sam Dordick, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks so much for listening to the Salts Mongoose Bendesky Hour.
Thank you.